Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel. It is a new month. We, in October, are doing some horror-themed or horror-adjacent characters. My favorite is like doing the real obscure weird ones that people don't even necessarily want to think about. I am here to talk to you today about Hell Cow. Yes, that's right. You heard me correctly. Hell Cow. My dear friend Josh Trujillo is joining me. Josh got to write Hell Cow, and he gave her a little baby named Hellcalf. Welcome to the show, Josh. How are you?
I'm doing well. Melting in the heat. That's the way we do it here in SoCal. You know, it was an honor to write for Hellcow. She is one of my favorite oddball Marvel characters, and I kind of fell in love with Hellcow all over again and playing Marvel Snap on my phone. There's a Hellcow card that's fairly competitive.
What does this card do?
So it's not really that thematic, but you play Hellcow and you discard two cards from your hand. And that's quite effective in that kind of deck type. So, but it's an overpowered card in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
but
yeah. One of those, it's a little amped up.
It's a combo card for sure. And then also like it's introduced a whole new generation to Hellcow via Marvel Snap. Because it's like when I was growing up, I didn't have a lot of money. So we would buy like one pack of trading cards for like a birthday or something. And so we'd always end up with kind of like, no offense to these characters, but like the crummier, less popular Marvel characters. So we never got Wolverine cards. We'd get like Paste Pot Pete or Aurora. No offense to Aurora fans everywhere. But you know what I mean? Like kind of the B and the C list characters. And they became our favorites. So I'm hoping that the next generation will fall in love with Hellcow like I fell in love with Paste Pot Pete.
I love Paste Pot Pete as well. The trapster himself. He's such a weirdo. There's so many campy Silver Age characters we've never even talked about on my show. Like I was thinking of the Living Eraser the other day, who's like a little green guy from another dimension. And if he like swipes you, whatever he swipes erases and like goes into his dimension. So it's like a teleportation thing, but it looks like he's just erasing you off the page. It's a fantastic effect. We should do more Living Eraser stories.
I'm making a mental note of it right now.
I could even send you the research. There's a lot of these delightful old campy ones. Now we are in Halloween month, which is always fun because we get to have some slightly different themed characters. There's a lot of those like nonsense Marvel monsters, but there's a lot of just campy, ridiculous monster like movies or monsters in fiction. At my house once a month, we host a cringe movie night. And one of my favorites is when we take a really weird concept. There's a movie called The Velocipastor, and it's a velociraptor, or it's a pastor who turns into a velociraptor. Or there's like a Lavalantula, which is like the lava tarantula. Lamageddon. Lamageddon's another one. Oh, the best one is Zombievers.
Zombievers.
That's a real show. Hellcow falls into this category for me. Do you have any of those classic like monster movies or just like really bad horror films that you are fond of?
Gosh. I mean, let's see. I don't know if you've seen Birdemic. It's kind of like The Birds if it was shot for $15 by someone who didn't speak English as their primary language, because it's like a film student who came from, I think, like Thailand, and they wanted to make their first student film, and it's just awful. I went to midnight screenings of it in LA because it would kind of developed a cult following. I think they did two or three of them, but like it is just the most incoherent thing to the point where you're wondering, like, did the actors realize what they'd signed up for? Are they just reading these lines completely oblivious to whatever the plot is? I love that kind of that distance between like filmmaking and camp.
Yeah, and when they think it's good, but the budget's low and they're just doing their best. The best one of all time, if you've never seen it, it was made in Utah. It's considered the best worst movie ever. There's literally a documentary about the making of this film that's called The Best Worst Movie, and it's Troll 2.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say Troll 2.
Have you seen Troll 2?
Yes, I actually kind of like it.
It's amazing. We took our children to a screening of it. In fact, one of my local friends was in that film as he's one of the teens. It's a ridiculous film. There's no Troll 1, and also there's no trolls in the movie. That's where we begin.
That's the way to do it, honestly. Don't give the people what they expect. Give
Marvel
them
has a
nothing.
bunch of these as well, right? Like there's a when John Byrne did like his She-Hulk run in the 80s or early 90s, it's like she's not fighting Titania, she's fighting Sprag, the Living Hill, or the Living Eraser falls into this category, I'm sure. There's a bunch of these just bizarre monsters. There's like that the house that like eats people. There's a bunch of these very odd creations in the Marvel universe. And of course, we have Howard the Duck as like the Steve Gerber character in the 70s that took off with weird popularity, and he had an ongoing title, and everyone he fought was some sort of parody or pun or like some character you'd see in a Hostess fruit pie ad or like Mad Magazine somewhere. And that's where we open. I don't know if you're a big Howard the Duck head or not. There's some fun
A
stuff.
little bit, a little bit. The story of how like they almost got sued for him is kind of funny. And also like he's such an oddball POV character to the Marvel universe. Like, normally you think like you want the most kind of straight edge normal character to be your window to the world, right? But then like in this case, Gerber was just like, let's just throw Donald Duck in there and see what happens.
Then Gerber also was really popular for writing Man-Thing. And then back then we have giant size X-Men and giant size Fantastic Four, but we also have giant size Man-Thing, which is hilarious. The cover of the first issue is Man-Thing fighting a character named the Glob, who's punching Man-Thing and like splatting all over him. It's quite unfortunate. But Howard the Duck initially shows up in Man-Thing. And Giant Size Man-Thing is also the series where we first meet Hellcow. Do you like a Giant Size Man-Thing?
I do love a giant-sized man thing. Kind of pulling back to the trading cards, actually. I remember having a man thing one in one of my trading card games, and he's a pretty good card. I love the stories of these characters, but these weird attachments I have with them through video games or whatever, like, is also quite compelling.
Yeah, I think we attach to them through a movie or a video game or, like an assist in an old like Arcade's Revenge or, whatever game we play. I think that's very normal. The action figures we imprint on or the trading cards I collected in the 90s is still my favorite thing about certain characters. This is the how they looked on their trading card. Did you collect those like Fleer X-Men cards back in the late 90s?
As many as I could, like the really painterly ones, like
Yeah.
those were so beautiful.
I had a bajillion of those. I used to like keep them in a little binder in like plastic sleeves. Hellcow is a character who is a vampire cow. She's half cow, half vampire. She's all cow and all vampire. She can be all those things. She is fierce. She is ridiculous. She has a terrible origin story, but there's just something great about her. The two best stories about this character are the first one and the last one. The first one is the Steve Gerber one, and the last one is the one Josh Trujillo wrote. They're both delightful and have like a similar vibe and a similar feel. And then the stuff in the middle for this character is like, oof, her appearances in Deadpool are rough. We'll talk about it. I would love to hear how Hellcow happened for you. I know you write just various and sundry projects. How did you end up doing Hellcow during the recent Blood Hunt event?
Yeah, so Blood Hunt came to be, and my editor, Martin Bureau, was really excited about the potential for a Hellcow story. And I was kind of stunned because I've had in my short list, even going back to my first Marvel work, Hellcow was on the list of characters I've always wanted to write for. And I didn't think it would ever happen because, like, where is there an opportunity to tell a story about this classic vampiric cow, right? And so with Blood Hunt, they pulled out the toy chest, and every vampire got a little play this summer. So it was a perfect opportunity to do something weird and kind of wacky. And I thought the best thing you could do with Hellcow was play it perfectly straight. And that's more or less my approach.
Oh, you treat her very seriously. Absolutely. Now, how did you first learn of Hellcow? Like, how did she make your list?
How did Hellcow make my list? It was probably like a late night wiki hole. I don't think I've read these giant sized man thing reprints or anything like that. Though maybe it just become maybe an old Wizard magazine joke led to some research or something. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah,
who
it's just
knows
like
how
on
they
that.
spin
She's
out
like the
these
character on those
characters.
lists of like weirdest Marvel characters of all time.
Yeah, and I always thought that there is something kind of scary about her, and I famously love cows. So it was a perfect blend of the two things. I don't know how I learned about her. I think you just reach a certain time of your life and you're just aware of Hellcow and become in her thrall.
I love that list where you like Google weirdest characters ever. And then you like, I mean, if you take all the problematic characters off, which is its own thing, you know, like that's the yellow claw list out there. But like the camp, like, wait, what? This is where you see characters like Wood God and the Aquarian and Hellcow. Just some very, very strange dives that, you know, like the Steel Smasher, or the Steel Slammer, I mean, who's like the Pog-themed villain that fought Green Goblin in the 90s. You know, like when you get into those categories of characters and you have to like be like, wait, where did this come from? It's a delightful ride. Hellcow is definitely, definitely on that list of characters that you're just like, oh, no. U.S. Ace or U.S. Archer, which is Marvel's like the guy that like drives a big rig semi-truck through space. Like,
oh, I love that.
There's this list of just bizarre NFL super pro. Hellcow is there, but she's got something magic. You want to talk to us a little about Hellcow's visual? How do you capture Hellcow artistically?
You know, she is a dark furred bovine. She's kind of got these like occasionally kind of fiery red eyes. It depends on the artistic interpretation. And she's wearing a cape. And I think that's the most important part, is that she has like a classic like Party City Halloween store black cape around her neck. Sometimes she has a bell, but you know, she is just an unassuming, seemingly harmless cow until you get too close to her.
There's something so odd about this choice. The vampire trope is, you know, you create rules about how vampires work. There's so many vampire stories at Marvel. There's a vampire nation. They just keep going back to the vampires, which is fun sometimes. You know, in the X-Men, we got the Dracula Storm stuff way back when. And then in what, like 2010, Victor Gishler did like the Curse of the Mutants storyline where they like fought all the different clans of vampires. Jubilee was a vampire. Like there's a lot. But in Bloodhunt, even in Leah Williams' recent, you know, Exterminators, they were fighting vampires and blowing them up all over the place. So there's a weird staying power for vampires in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, there's I'm remembering like an Al Ewing story. I think it's Doctor Doom and Dracula have like a conversation on the dark side of the moon. I'm trying to remember what book that was, but I remember that was one of the earliest Marvel stuff. It was so cool at the time. Oh, it was MI6. It was like Captain Britain and the MI6 or something like that.
Oh, there's also, goodness, this is a tangent. I mean, we've got everything from Twilight to Interview with a Vampire, but I'm really into What We Do in the Shadows, which is a delightful, like Hellcat would be a delightful appearance in that series. So a vampire bites you, and if they drain all your blood, they kill you. But if they just poison your blood, then you like leave you for 3 days after you die. Then you'll also turn into a vampire and you'll like have a little bit of a sire complex. And then, you know, like there's all these bajillions of stories about vampires and the rules of vampires. And again, they're all over the Marvel Universe. Cows are also all over the Marvel Universe, from like Fantastic Four number 3, where they fight the Skrulls. And at the end, they convince them to turn into cows. And then there's approximately 15 stories at Marvel about people who went on to either eat, breed, or drink milk from those vampire or from those Skrull cows, and like what happened to them. Bizarre, bizarre, bizarre.
Yeah, that's the Skrull kill crew. Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, that story, as a continuity guy, that they drive me nuts. It's really stupid. But also, Anthony Oliveira and I have a whole episode about Bova. People have feelings about Bova. There's a lot of cows in Marvel's history. You say you're famously a cow guy. We've talked about your Farmville cows, but what's your with cows, Josh?
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I did. If you play Farmville 3, or more likely your like great aunt plays it on her phone, I've named all the cows in that game and other things, because I work in video games. I just always thought they were neat. You know, I wish I had more of like a cow origin story, like One Saved My Life, or, you know, I won a cow tournament. But I just think they're like, the comedy is there. They're so sweet. I love looking at pictures of baby cows when I'm in when I'm struggling, and it always works.
I stayed for 2 weeks once on a dairy, and that cured me of cow love real fast.
Oh, I'm sure, if you're like really up in their faces.
It's gross. I mean, the milking was fine. The manure cleanup, not so much. The taking care of the babies was fine. But then there was like, it was like the season where all the flies had laid the eggs, and like the facility was full of maggots, which is just what has to happen. But I was like, I hated the whole thing. It was gross.
Wow, I guess that's more the horror element of
Yeah,
cows.
maybe. Like, there's horror that's fun, and then there's horror that's not so fun, which is, its own thing. So the idea, you take the premise that an animal can be a vampire, which you have to stretch your logic a little bit. But for some reason, for Hellcow, that worked. There is a story by Steve Gerber and Frank Brunner in 1975 in Giant Size Man Thing. That's a number five. The cover says, Howard the Duck battles for his life against the most incredible vampire of all. And the story is called Hell Cow, which is such a great name. It's not that's a brilliant choice. It's the cow from hell. And Howard the Duck is in jail because he just defeated Garko the Man Frog, which tells you a lot about his rogues gallery already. And a guy tries to strip search him, but like runs away when he realizes, oh, you're not wearing a costume, you're an actual duck. And then we cut over to Jubal Brown, the farmer. And this is where your story matches like the tone of this story when we take the farmer, like this story. With Jubal Brown is so fun. Did you do that on purpose? I'm presuming like the tone of your Hellcow story seemed to kind of match this farmer's story in its own way.
Yeah, I think you have to kind of play onto like the gothic horror element of it to a degree, right? It's like I'm thinking of like this story in particular, or like, oh gosh, kind of old 70s horror movies as well, the kind of play at the farm is scary atmosphere, which is like not a new trope, right?
I'm waiting
But
for
there,
American Horror Story, Farm.
yeah, but this page in particular has this great establishing shot of Bessie, and she just looks like a harmless cow, right? And then immediately the rug is pulled from under the farmer.
So Jubal Brown, his Jubal, walks into his barn and he finds his cow wearing a Dracula cape, and he goes, "Well, I'll be. Where did you come from? That cape and all, you must have been some kind of show cow, a runaway, I bet. Somebody will be looking for you, sweetheart. I'll fix this stall up for you, and come morning, we'll call the." And then the narrator. Do you want to read the narrator here?
And Farmer Brown's destiny is death. Razor sharp fangs seek deep into the flesh of his throat, and a moment later, his body is literally drained of blood.
Is it literally or is it utterly? Because utterly is funny.
Utterly is better. Is it utterly? Oh, it is utterly. I'm sorry.
Utterly drained because that's funny. And then her thirst sated, the cowled cow undergoes a weird transformation. Her billowing cape becomes leathern wings, the wings of a vampire bat. And so this is the fifth time someone has died on this farm, and she can grow bat wings too. What are your thoughts on the art here? It's like quite foreboding.
I love it. The image of Hellcow kind of transforming into their bat form, it kind of reminds me of like, oh gosh, like Night on Bald Mountain in Fantasia, like Chernabog. It's like very demonic and cool, and like it is still visually a cow, but it is like from it's otherworldly. I really
Yeah.
love the attention to detail in the art here, and especially like the inks, I think serve the story really well.
Like the character is I mean it's a joke character, clearly it's Hellcow, but they're writing it as if it's a real horror story, right? Like it's got that vibe of like camp horror that you're exactly looking for. I love we could come up with a whole list of note of nicknames for Hellcow, but the caption gives us now the bovine blood beast, which is amazing. The bovine blood beast stalks the city, and she has come seeking vengeance. Vengeance for a life stolen away for her more than 300 years ago in the plentiful pastures of Switzerland as the favorite cow of old Hans. Do you want to tell us Bessie's origin story?
It's Dracula, if I recall specifically, but Bessie was transformed into the hell cow, I believe, as a result of coming across Dracula over 300 years ago.
Yeah, like her farmer was just sleeping, and like Dracula came to town to eat someone and couldn't find anyone. And he wanders onto the farm, and the narrator says, and the stranger was very thirsty and not for milk.
It's so good. I love that this is the same Dracula that is in Bloodhunt.
And then Hans could not bear to eat her bloodless corpse, too close to his heart for that. Tearfully, he committed her body back to the earth and said a quiet prayer, never guessing that 3 nights later, Bessie would rise from her grave, undead. So Dracula would not normally eat a cow, but on this particular night, he was so hungry and he was thirsty, but not for milk. She only had one
Well,
thing to offer him.
I also can't get over a couple of things. Like, it's very unusual, I think, to bury a cow, and then even more so to leave a grave marker. So Bessie was loved. There is like this weird element of tragedy and loss that we don't touch on here.
There's like a weird version of this story where, you know, Dracula found Bessie just so beautiful. Like he sees her eyes in the moonlight and I have to have her. Was she just that lovely? She inspired such loyalty. So now for the past 300 years, apparently, Bessie as Hellcow has been hunting Dracula down, and now she's in Cleveland.
Yeah, 300 years. It's not easy to be a vampire for that long, I would imagine. It's certainly not being a vampire cow.
I love the idea of her just flying from farm to farm. Random farmers walk into their barn like, oh, hey, old girl. And she just like drains their blood. It's delightful. So Howard the Duck puts on a disguise to lure Bessie out.
Howard is in a full cloak, like trench coat, and a hat on top of the trench coat, but it's much too tall. So he's using a broom to kind of prop up the top part. It looks a little bit like two kids standing on each other's shoulders to buy a ticket to an adult movie or something.
He's at night and Bessie flies out of the sky and like rips his costume off and he goes, yipes, I'm being dive bombed by a cow. She bears her fangs. She turns into mist. She turns back into cow form, bucks him into a brick building. He tries to pick up a wrench and hold it in the shape of a cross. The narrator says, her crimson eyes flaring with rage, the recreant ruminant draws back. Okay, bovine blood beast, recreant ruminant.
Recreant ruminant wins for me because I don't think those words normally come together. That is a nice vocabulary pull.
A ruminant is a version of a cow, which is a little known fact. And recreant, of course, means cowardly or unfaithful. Delicious.
They engage in a little bit of combat here. Howard is afraid of dropping his cross for fear of losing his only defense mechanism against the Hellcow. Keep in mind it is like a tire iron.
And again, listen to the dialogue here. The Hellcow hurls herself at her target, but misses, her cold, unmilkable udder barely brushing Howard's feathery crown. It's so great.
The tone of this is pitch perfect too. So Hellcow crashes into a bunch of tires and ends up biting into one of these like white wall tires. And I guess it gets stuck. Like it can't unclench from the tire.
And earlier we had the bovine blood beast, but here it says dazed, the bovine bloodsucker. I prefer their first one, I think. Struggles to extricate herself from the rubbery rings and falls. She sighs. A tear rolls down her hairy cheek. For her fangs are embedded in a white wall, and she knows her number is up. So her teeth got stuck in the wall. And Howard hesitates because Bessie is crying, but he stakes her in the heart anyway. Tell us about her mournful moo as she dies.
Oh, it's so sad. What is it? And with a single sickening thwomp, he sends the Hellcow to her final rest. But no sooner has the deed been done than the real police show up. They're a little confused about the situation they've walked into, naturally.
Do you too have a milkless udder?
Do I have a milkless udder? I don't know what kind of podcast this is.
There's just so many weird tear rolls down her hairy cheek. The choices made by the narrator in this are delightful. But Howard stopped any further farmers from being killed because Hellcow is dead forever. Just kidding. She comes back 35 years later. But this story, like, it packs a punch. It fucking rocks, right? Like, it's a good story.
Oh, it's memorable for a reason. And it's a great pull for future writers to come back to this.
35 years of no Hellcow, and then they bring Hellcow back.
I mean, that's my favorite thing in the world. You know this. I love pulling from the backlist.
That's my favorite too. I love it. I have so many story ideas. When we get, there's a story called Deadpool Team Up. This is a time when Deadpool was being so vastly oversaturated in comic form. We had the Deadpool core and like three Deadpool books, and it's a lot. Deadpool Team Up was this bizarre series that would team up Deadpool up with mostly like Marvel's worst characters. All the people I was listing earlier as like the people on the what the hell list. You know, if you want a Deadpool and Frogman story or a Deadpool and Wood God story, neither of those characters are used. But these are the characters you're going to see in Deadpool Team Up. Also, the numbers were counting backwards.
they started at 900, and then the next issue would be 989 or 990. I don't know, whatever it was. They were counting backwards. So this issue is like 885, but it's like the 15th issue of the run, I think. Just bizarre, bizarre. Are you a Deadpool guy? He can be a lot sometimes.
When used tastefully, I will say I like him. I really like him in that X-Force run with Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
I really like him. There's a couple solo runs with him. I think he teams up with Benjamin Franklin in one of them that I actually quite enjoyed.
Yes, that's an excellent one. The lecherous ghost of Ben Franklin.
Get everything for your next project in Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. In Deadpool Team Up 885, Bessie is back. She has a vampiric cover billing. She gets her own logo here. It's a whole Hell Cow logo with Hell in red and Cow in black and white spots. And this is Rick Spears and Phil Bond. I don't know either of these guys, but clearly they were digging deep. So Hellcow, instead of turning to ash, apparently she ended up buried with the stake in her heart in a coffin in a grave. And then a guy named Dr. Kilgore learned about her. He met a fortune teller who, because he was dying, and the fortune teller sent him to find Hellcow because he wanted a cure for cancer. So he digs Hellcow up, opens the coffin, removes the stake, and then puts her in a silver cage so she can't attack him. And silver is bad for werewolves, but also maybe Hellcows, I don't know. So she's alive, and he spends weeks milking her and drinking her milk, not a milkless udder anymore, in order to cure his cancer, but it's vampire milk. But he also decides he needs cells from Deadpool to cure his cancer. So he captures Deadpool too, and then they both break free. Deadpool and Hellcow team up, they fight Kilgore, and he has mutated himself into a weird, gross cancer man from vampire cow milk and Deadpool.
It happens. I mean, who among us?
There's a time when Deadpool and Squirrel Girl's DNA gets mixed in a machine and it spilts out a character named Squirrel Pool that they consider their child. That's a story. Anyway, this is a gross cancer man. So Hellcow bites Deadpool and gives him fangs. And then they decide to be best friends and they defeat the guy. But when they walk outside, the sun hits Hellcow and turns her into a burger patty. And then Deadpool tries to go back in time several times to keep Hellcow alive because he loves her so much and he doesn't want a vampire burger patty from the sun. The end, just wow. The whole thing, just wow. What are your thoughts on the recap of this Hellcow story?
I thought you did a beautiful job with it. No, it's nice to dig. It's nice to dig her up, right? And I think Deadpool's a perfect like toy box to do that in. But I prefer, as you know, I prefer a more serious take on the cow herself.
Yeah. So creepy vampire drinking her milk, turning himself into something. They have to fight and kill him, and she also gives Deadpool fangs. But then the sun hits her and she turns into a burger patty. I like a good humor gag. Like, that's funny. But the continuity Marvel guy in me is like, that's not how this happens. What the hell? Like, she's alive, but now she's that patty. And then, I don't know. The whole thing's craziness.
Oh, that's just Deadpool, though. I don't think you'll ever be satisfied playing, like, Deadpool or Gwenpool continuity with them.
There's got to be, like, a story reason. If it's a dream, great. I'm fine with it. Anyway, it's bizarre. It's a weird gag. We jump to my favorite. I love, 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 love. Ryan North's Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, front to back, one of my favorite mm-hmm. titles of all time. Hellcow gets a moment in Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Volume 2, Number 6. Squirrel Girl and her friend Nancy Whitehead are studying Hellcow online for reasons. And Squirrel Girl says, she's a cow who's also a Dracula. It's pretty great. I mean, except for the trying to take over the world part, obviously. And Nancy says, she's a vampire, not a Dracula. And Squirrel Girl says, Nancy, please. She had the cape and everything. And we see an image that shows Hellcow, and there's little arrows that indicate horns, cloak, fangs, bell that you give a cow if you like that cow a lot, thirst for blood. So Squirrel Girl goes, conclusion, definitely a Dracula. And Nancy goes, no, it's like Dracula is the person, vampire is the class. And Squirrel Girl says, anyway, whatever. I got her back to Dracula Farm USA without anyone else turning into Draculas. Nobody gets Dracula'd into new Draculas by that Dracula when I'm around. And Nancy says, Doreen, just stop saying Dracula. So we don't see the fight, but we get reference to Squirrel Girl, who's always trying to help the villains that she's fighting, getting Hellcow off to some safe place. The end, it's cute. I love this series.
No, Squirrel Girl and Hellcat would be friends. They find a way to make it work.
I think they could make that happen. Yeah, Squirrel Girl will be friends with anyone as long as they're trying to be good in some way. I love that series so much. I really do. And then we have Spider-Man Deadpool, which is a series that I feel like could have been like 6 issues or 8 or 12, but it's like 50, and it just goes on and on. And, you know, it was selling, so I guess that's a thing. And there's so many weird stories in this book. But Robbie Thompson and Chris Pachalo in 2018 give us a weird story where Deadpool has formed like a team of people, and it's a weird team, and it's characters from all over the fucking place, and you're just like, why? I don't get it. I haven't met Robbie Thompson or Chris Bachalo. I'm sure that they had lovely ideas. It's just a bizarre ride. So this is a Hellcow who stands upright and talks in like English language, and she has like glowing red eyes. And she has taken a job, and she is working for S.H.I.E.L.D., basically. And, like, her boss is Kate Waynesborough, who is Hulk's old girlfriend who got turned into the Lady MODOK that one time. And then she was, like, in the Planet Hulk crazy. She's got rock powers. A caption in issue 23 says, Hellcow, a.k.a. Cow? Bessie? Or Mabel? Or some such? Bitten by a vampire and condemned to immortality, and now apparently an upright talking assistant. We'll explain in later issues. Probably. And in this series, Hellcow stands around drinking blood milkshakes, and like Deadpool interacts with a team of people all around him. One of them is a life model decoy of the character Clay Quartermain, who has bonded with a little character named Branch, who's like a sentient offshoot of Man-Thing that like lives on this LMD's back. And then there's Screwball, like the social media chick that like fights Spider-Man for likes. And then there's Manphibian, who's an old monster from like Marvel. He's like a green merman guy. And then there's Bruce and Deborah, who are walking talking sharks. And then the final member of this team is fucking Husk, like from Generation X. Husk is on this team with Hellcow. So there's our weird X-Men tie-in. It's so odd. And like Hellcow eats some monster blood, and there's a battle, and eventually we learn that she has betrayed the team to the Chameleon, and she gets arrested, and there's a whole bunch of crazy shit that's going on. There is a moment where she finds some decommissioned mechanical battle fleas that S.H.I.E.L.D. commissioned, and she decides to keep them for herself. So there's that whole, I'm not even going to spend time on those story because it's ridiculous, but here's 2 foot or standing on 2 feet Hellcow on a team with Husk. Thoughts, Josh?
No offense to Screwball, but man, what a terrible team for Husk to be on. That girl, she just does not get a moment in her favor. But I like oddball teams. I like the unexpected. Sometimes if the story requires it, I think it can work. Sometimes it just feels like I grabbed 5 random action figures from the bin and here we are.
I'm a guy who celebrates stories, and I will always look for the thing that I love. But you know, the continuity guy, when you gotta read like 50 issues of something, you're just like, oh no. But it's a weird turn for Hellcow. I don't truly understand. I almost feel like this is like an alternate reality Hellcow. I don't know. It's strange. Good for her. She drank like a guy and got like thinking powers, and then she went back to being a cow. I don't know. You have to set us, you have to give us the story. How did Hellcow go from jail to your story? What did we miss in the interim?
Oh gosh, I like to think that Hellcow was one of many vampires who were held captive through various means. But then when the blood hunt happened and the sun was blocked out, the vampires started to arise and started to free their fellow vampires. And Hellcow escaped in this moment of opportunity. And Hellcow fled to what I consider like upstate New York or somewhere in kind of the general prairie, perhaps even. But like, that's where we find Hellcow, who has set up a base and is trying to live a nice, quiet, comfortable life for herself.
And she has a vibrant sex life, apparently.
No, there's a whole story about that, actually. I don't know if we want to go through the story page by page, but there is a story.
Absolutely we do. It's delicious. Okay, so we talked about you getting the gig for this story. Then you sit down to write it. You know your page count. You figure out the tone that you're looking for. How did you come up with this particular story? Give us the setup as we're getting ready to get into Bloodhunters number 3.
So I pitched a couple different Hellcat takes. One was a little bit more like Night of the Living Dead, with like a bunch of people in a house and Hellcow and trying to break in. Another one I wanted to do was J. Jonah Jameson versus Hell Cow, which would have been a much different tonally.
Absolutely.
But I was happy with where we landed because I had this idea of the title. I had two titles in mind, but the first title is The Fall of the House of Utter. And then the second
so
title.
Stupid, and I love it.
So stupid. And then the second title I wanted to do was House of M. Ooh.
You chose correctly with The Fall of the House of Utter. You got to work with the great artist Claire Rowe, who I was super unfamiliar with, but I really love Claire's art in this. What was that pairing like?
Oh, she's fantastic. It was so funny because I was pulling out samples of like, oh, I kind of want the art to look like this, not even realizing it was Claire. And then they're like, oh, that's who I got. And so it just lined up perfect. Like that kind of darker, I almost wanted like an EC horror vibe to the comic, but something with a little more modern sensibilities than that. But I wanted something kind of dense. I wanted to tell a very complete story. And I wanted like a heavy narration throughout because we don't have a lot of time with Hellcow. So we really have to feel it.
Absolutely. So can I read this page by page and then I'll have you comment?
Whatever you'd like to do. Yeah.
I'm gonna give it the full narration. So there's a man arriving on a farm with a pitchfork and he's getting a job, basically. And the narration is, things were never the same once the skies turned black. But I guess in my life, they were never quite right to begin with. I'd answered a Rocks List ad for a farmhand way out in the boonies. It seemed like the perfect escape, an escape from the chaos of the cities. And if I was lucky, an escape from my past. People like me don't get a lot of second chances, not after what I've done. If they catch me, it's over. But this farm feels like a world away from all that. A home. That doesn't mean I felt comfortable. I didn't know who I was working for, and the quiet guy in the fields with me kept to himself until the day he finally did speak up. The man in the field says, I've been looking for a replacement for a long time, Levi, but before I go, I have just one word of advice. Stay out of the barn. Tell us about the setup.
Yeah, so the question from my editor was, how did Hellcow hire someone on Craigslist to do this job? And so we had to come up with the farmhand to do that. So that was kind of all these like funny logistical but obvious questions kept popping up in writing the story. So it was like, how did Hellcat doesn't have a Craigslist account? That might be a step too far because we didn't want to do the Deadpool Hellcat. We didn't want to do the upright having a conversation. I'm not saying that Bessie can't do that. I'm just saying that in our story, she prefers not to do that.
I prefer your story. So next page, we see Levi on the porch until he hears a sound. I thought about his cryptic warning that night, about what was happening to the world outside the farm, about what blocked out the sun. Crash. Oh God, somebody. But what was waiting for me at my new home was much, much worse. He walks around the corner and there's this amazing image of like Hellcat and Shadow ripping the farmhand apart with her like snout as her, like she's got the cape on and it's all red and her eyes are shining and there's like bats flying over her. It's fantastic. It's so great. It only took a second to realize the situation I was in. Oh, fuck, he says. My mysterious boss, she was the Hellcow.
Yeah, so that's kind of the core.
This image Claire drew, like the otter is underneath, like in the dark, even looking frightening, all pointed out with her teats. Like the whole thing is phenomenal.
Oh yeah, it's for sure. And you know, they always say don't make your artists draw horses or motorcycles. And I was like, I'm so sorry, but this is about Hellcow. We have to do it. But the core of the comic, the whole idea was like, what is it like to work for Hellcow? And that seemed like such a stupid idea that we could definitely get 10 pages out of this.
So he takes a job and he stays out of the barn because that was the warning. And Hellcow goes off every night and he watches her leave and come back. Narration. It's a terrible fate, but at least I was still alive. I did my part and I didn't get in the cow's way. We settled into a routine even. It's amazing how adaptable people can be. During the day, I did odd tasks around the farm, and later, the cow did her business. And I love how you put day in quotes because the world's black, right? She searched the countryside for victims to prey on. Sometimes she brought back fresh ones back to the barn to eat. Monster hunters, other monsters, monster hunter cows, really wild stuff. There's a whole set of adventures. If she wanted to, she would have eaten me already. Hellcow must like me. And we get the first image of her face. It's like dripping in blood with glowing red eyes. Like this is a full horror story. It's amazing.
Oh, it's the art by Claire is incredible. And it just playing up the horror of it. You know, you're trapped in this remote place and the only other thing you have in your life is this cow that at any moment could suck all your blood.
Do you have names in mind for any of the monster hunter cows that were coming after Hellcow?
I've thought about this. I don't have any. No, I have a couple good puns, but We'll talk a little bit about what my dreams are for the future of Hellcow after this.
Yes, absolutely. So the next day, he's got his job. He hears a startling noise. She's got a victim in the barn that is trying to escape. And this is like some, hot monster hunter guy with a scar across his eyes, wearing like a fantastic blue trench coat. And he's got stakes on his belt, and he's got holy water in his belt, and he throws it at Hellcow, who screams, "Murn!" And he tries running for it, but Levi decides he's on Hellcow's side, and he kills this man with a pitchfork and just lets him die. He goes, "I still don't understand what I did, and I think she did. I had no remorse for the stranger whose life I took, but a question lingered in my mind. Why was I being so protective over this monster?" And again, another image of her face is like the holy water is burning acid into her skull for just a moment. What's Levi's backstory? What's the secret this guy's keeping?
So I like to think that Levi had is a little bit of like a robbery gone wrong, killed a few people on the way, and then things just kind of spiraled worse and worse and worse. And so he can't go back to good society because they'll lock him up, execute him, who knows what. But at the same time, is this a fate worse than death, being trapped on this limbo farm with Hellcow?
He's fine killing the guy with the pitchfork. He's just bored.
Oh, for sure. No, I don't. That's something we kind of touch on a little bit in the next page, I think, is like the ambiguity of it, right? Like, is he being protective over this cow? Is he falling under the cow's hypnotic thrall? Is he just so afraid to go back to society that he's willing to take a life in the name of Bessie?
He wonders, is it mutual respect or Stockholm syndrome? Dark magic? Why does this cow elicit so many feelings? These questions wash over my mind, but in my quiet moments, I find myself obsessed with Hellcow's power. And this is Josh Trujillo just talking through the character at this point. These are your personal thoughts.
These are how I feel about the cow. Yeah.
I'm obsessed with her power, most importantly, her immortality. If I had that, I'd never have to worry about my past again or my future. I'd be free. And here's the reveal, because Levi coughs into a handkerchief, and he's apparently got that thing that Nicole Kidman had in Moulin Rouge. It's the consumption.
It's the consumption. It's the bloody handkerchief.
I decided I couldn't wait anymore. When I knew she was gone, I ignored the old farmhand's advice and I entered her barn. I wasn't even sure what I was looking for. I just knew I had to be there. And then I saw it. So innocent, so pure. A bucket of milk from the immortal herself. I savored every drop as it washed down my throat. I'd never felt more powerful until. Too pained to even notice my presence. I'd never seen her so lifeless before. Okay, so Hellcow's barn is set up with like coffins against the wall, one with an inverted cross and the other with a pentagram on it. And then there's like candles burning everywhere. Like she has put effort into this. And there's like a trunk that's like bleeding blood and then a pail of her milk, which that man tried to steal in Deadpool Team Up. Not cool guy. So.
Can't do it. No, my note, there's a panel of him drinking the milk, and my note was like Saltburn, if you've seen that particular scene from the movie.
Oh my goodness. Saltburn made me so uncomfortable. I hated
This
it.
scene made me really uncomfortable. That's why I knew it was perfect for drinking the milk.
He just walks right in into the well-lit barn. Okay, so the smaller coffin, there's a sound from within, murn, which is my favorite cow sound. It's not moo, it's murn. And the reason I couldn't enter the barn, the baby, hell calf. Surprise, there's a hell calf out there. You got to tell me about your decision to create hell calf because it's everything.
I mean, I love a baby animal, but I just thought it was like, I loved the conceit of like the old horror trope of like, don't go in the basement, don't go in the barn. And I knew the reveal had to be something special. Normally it's like you go downstairs, it's filled with dead bodies or whatever. Like we know Hellcow kills. So I was like, what could be more unexpected than a baby Hellcow? And we know, I've learned through Marvel's Tom Brevoort himself, that vampires cannot reproduce in the way that, we normally reproduce. So there's a story here that Hellcow found a baby calf and
And
adopted it as her
earned
own.
it. I never thought of this. When I said she had a vibrant sex life, I was wrong. She wanted a progeny.
She just wanted someone to take care of. She has a heart. She was raised right by that farmer 300 years ago.
So Levi decides instead of running, he cuts his hand and he's like, "Here, I'll let you feed on me, turn me into a vampire as well, and I'll like live here with you and keep you safe. Otherwise, I'm gonna burn your farm to the ground. And there's this great moment. He's got a blade in one hand, his hand's dripping blood. Hellcow and Hellcat like lock eyes, close in, and they like taste the blood and then like make eye contact. So that's what's happening in these panels. It's really, really beautifully drawn. I could see what she was thinking. Did she trust me? For a moment, I believed it. For once, a plan of mine was starting to pay off. The cold licks from the cow's tongue made my heart sing. Soon I would be one of them. Was this actually happening? And then Hellcow's eyes gleam like cable, like it's just a little ping, and she goes, moo. Just bites his fucking hand off. So you gotta talk about this attack scene. It's so good. The calf like ripping or like wrapping its hooves around Levi's trunk.
Yeah, like I said, tone was something we really wanted to get right on the story. And I actually had Hellcat was gonna speak English and say a little thing instead of moo. And then the great note from my editor was just like, moo's good enough. Moo is perfect. And it's moo. True. It's a really scary panel, I will say, as far as the thing goes. I love the reversal of like a cow being so innocent we think of and kind of dumb, being like a schemer and like coordinating with Hellcat to do this death.
You've given Hellcat like a rich interior world that we have to intuit from reading. It's fantastic. Levi, as they are murdering him, like ripping him to pieces, the captions say, I was an idiot. I had every chance to leave, to confront my sins, to own up to them, but I acted like a fool, a fanatic, a monster. I wanted so much for myself. Instead, I lost it all to a cow. Closing caption is the fall of the House of Utter. Josh Trujillo and Claire Rowe. Like it's so fucking great, man. I really love it.
Oh, thank you. No, the response for this has been like super positive. Cause you know, you sometimes these crossover books, the stories slip through the cracks, but surprisingly, people were hungry for Hellcow content. And I'm really proud of how it turned out. I thought Claire drew the hell out of it. I keep, no pun intended, I tried to. I keep trying to harass Claire and I'm like, do you sell original pages? But it's all digital. So
you really tried to milk this Hellcow story for all it was worth. Oh
man, if it was up to me, I'd be writing Hellcow every week on Marvel Unlimited.
So what's the like ongoing Hellcow adventure that you're referencing?
I want to do, you know how they like it's Jeff, like all those Jeff comics of the Land Shark, like going on little adventures. I want to do that with Hellcow during the holiday, the haunted holidays.
Amazing.
Like Hellcat going on little journeys in the Marvel universe.
There's a pizza dog story, like Infinity
Comics. We have good moments here. The next time they do the Pet Avengers, I think they have a perfect villain in Hellcat.
If they can do Marvel meows, you can definitely write Hellcow.
This is all I want. Yeah, you go from Captain America to Hellcow.
Hellcow is fun. It's almost weird to put her chronology together. Is she dead? Is she not? Is she a burger in the sun? Is she a sentient shield agent? Perhaps there's alternate reality Hellcows. We're all walking around at the same time. We don't know. But this story and her first one are solid, really fun reads. Like, delicious, delightful.
Yeah, thank you. I've always loved the character. It's so great to add a little pinpoint of the character on their history. Because you only get to visit Hellcow like once in a generation, it feels like.
And
so,
it's
like,
just fun seeing Josh Trujillo write horror, right? Like, that's fun.
This is my first horror comic, actually. So I was really pleased with how it turned out. Maybe there's some spookiness waiting for me in the future.
There's a lot of symbiotes out there. Symbiote Hellcow, I'm just saying.
No, oh, man. You just, there's money on the table there. You just said the wrong thing.
Well, what a delight. Simple, fun, wonderful conversation. Just celebrating fun, classic comic writing. Hellcow versus Zombievers. There's so many things we could go for here. She has a whole set of adventures out there, and I love that. I loved this story. I'm not a great Steve Gerber fan all the time, but that first Hellcow story fucking bangs. It's great. And then
it's a really great story, and it's just like such a tribute to like the beautiful weirdness of Steve Gerber's mind.
It's excellent. It really is. You know, a talking duck versus a cow vampire. It's all we need. Delightful time today. We're going to put this out on the Patreon first Wednesday in October, October 2nd. If you have anything you'd like to plug, I would love to hear it. And where can people find you if they'd like to follow your work?
Sure. You can find me on the internet at Lost His Keys Man. I lost my keys, man. That's all social medias for now. And then beyond that, you can buy my Blue Beetle run is collected in trade. The first half of it, at least. So you can pick up Blue Beetle Graduation Day, Blue Beetle Scarab War, And then the last volume will be out, I think, sometime in the spring. So pick those up. I have a big Marvel announcement, but I can't make it yet. I'll be back on the show to talk about it, I hope.
I hope so, too. That sounds delightful. And I'm so happy to hear that. You're on a new project now. So I hope that helps with the grieving process over Blue Beetle.
I know. It's so sad to see these books close. But also, like, you know, you get to do it. So
Yeah. It's a chapter. I'm happy for you.
Yeah. The end is never the end in comics. You think Hellcat's gone. 35 years later, they pop back up.
You're a delightful human. It's so good hanging out with you. Over on the main show, you can watch for after this. We're getting right through the end of the Silver Age before we launch Giant Size in the new year. So watch for our review of Incredible Hulk number 162, which is the first appearance of a white-furred flesh-eating creature that you may know from fighting Hulk and Wolverine once. We're going to talk about it all on the main show. My guests on that episode are two horror writers that I love, Tom Krajewski and Clay McLeod Chap. The next Patreon out right after this is going to be all about Matsuo Tsurayama, the cyborg crazy guy that was all connected to Wolverine and Kenon Psylocke. We'll talk about it. It's going to be a good time with Caroline Cosplay and Melanie Bolin. So thank you everybody for listening, and thank you to the wonderful Josh Trujillo for hanging out with me this evening. We'll see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon.
Bye guys.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.